Holden Caulfield might be the acme of teen angst, but the sentiment is alive and well in the work of Charles Baxter. Here he is with an excerpt from his novel, Saul and Patsy.
A squirrel squatted in the birdbath. Another squirrel was hanging by its claws onto the bird feeder. The girl, looking out her bedroom window at the backyard, cleaned her fingernails half-heartedly with a nail file and thought of the end of the world. She wondered why, if there was a word, ruthless, that was often applied to enemies of the USA, then what happened to its opposite, its lost positive, Ruth, which would have to mean kindness, but didn't mean anything, because no one used it. We had ruthless enemies, but no Ruth friends. Early in the morning, just after the sun was up, the squirrels looked like boys, somehow, she couldn't say why. Maybe because of the way they moved, skittering and chasing each other, twitching. Or maybe it was the fur, something. Her name was Gina, she was 16 years old, and it was Sunday, family day. After staring at the squirrels, she remembered to feed her guinea pig his breakfast food pellets. Wilbur squeaked softly as she dropped the pellets down the cage bars into the red plastic tray. It didn't take much to make him happy. On the other side of the room was a picture of Switzerland her mom had put up years ago. The picture had a lake in it, which was ruthlessly blue. Gina felt funny when she looked at this picture, so she didn't look at it very often. She couldn't take it down because her mom had given it to her. Family day. The plan was her dad would show up and take them, her brother, her mom, herself, to the beach. Gina threw on a t-shirt and a pair of jeans. She grabbed her flute and went into the basement to practice for the school marching band, of which she was a member. 10 minutes later, she heard the thud of the morning paper flung against the front screen door. Gina put her flute on top of her dad's workbench and went upstairs to read the headlines. The news consisted of Iraq, bombs, Cuba, jail, Ireland, more bombs, and then there was something about Gordy Himmelman. Gordy Himmelman? He had shot himself. To death. It was permanent. Why hadn't anyone called her about it? She had been in classes with Gordy Himmelman since kindergarten, but he was in a class by himself, and she hadn't seen much of him since he had dropped out. He muttered and swore and blew his nose on notebook paper, and he talked to himself in long strings of garble and never had any friends you could show in public. You could feel sorry for him, but he would never notice how sorry you felt, and he wouldn't care. Pity was lost on him. It was a total waste of time. In third grade, he had brought a penlight battery into school, and, standing next to the monkey bars, he had swallowed it during recess to attract attention to himself. The battery was only a double A, but even so. He had black and blue marks all over him most days. His breath smelled of dill pickles that had gone unfresh. He had bicycled to that teacher, Mr. Bernstein's house, where he had blown his brains out in the yard, in front of a tree, in the morning. A matinee suicide. On the front page of the paper was a picture of the tree. It was a color picture, and you could sort of see the blood if you looked closely. Gina felt something stirring inside her. She was kind of interested in death. Gordy was the first person she'd ever known who had entered it. He had gone from being Mr. Nothing to being Mr. Something else, a temporarily interesting person. She sat at the kitchen counter eating her strawberry Pop-Tart, wondering whether Gordy was lying on a bed surrounded by virgins, or eternal fire, or what. It was sort of cool, him doing that. Maybe the smartest thing he'd ever done. Adventuresome and courageous. If you didn't have a life, maybe you got one by being dead. Her dad was late. Finally, he showed up at 11:30, saying, "Ha ha, I'm late." He and Gina's mom were divorced, but they were still friends, and her dad had never really committed himself to the divorce, in Gina's opinion. He was half-hearted about it, a romantic sad sack. They had cooked up this family day scheme 2 years ago. Every weekend, he'd come to pick up Gina and Bertie, her little brother, and their mom, and then they'd do bowling-type activities for the sake of togetherness and friendliness, which, of course, was a total fraud, since they weren't together or friendly at all. Usually Saturday was family day, but sometimes Sunday was. Today they were going to the beach. Wild excitement. In the car, Gina studied her father's face. Because it was her father's, she didn't know if he was handsome or plain. You couldn't always tell when they were your parents. Sometimes at a stoplight or when he saw a car pull in front of him, her dad's face changed out of its TV sitcom expression. Suddenly he grimaced, like someone had started to do surgery on him, right over his heart, without anesthetic. And then that expression vanished, like it had never been there. What was that about? His pain, his secret squirrel life, probably. Still, there was no point in talking to him about Gordy Himmelman. At the lake, they settled in on their beach towels. Gina went to the concession stand to get herself an ice cream cone, which she would buy with her own money. The kid who worked at the stand, selling snack food and renting canoes, was a boy she didn't recognize, about her age, maybe a year or two older, with short orange hair and an earring, and he stood behind the counter next to the candy bar display, staring with pain and boredom at the floor. When Gina appeared, the boy looked at her with relief, relief followed by recognition and sympathy, recognition and sympathy followed by a leer as he checked out her breasts, the leer followed by a friendly smirk. It all happened very fast. He was like other boys. They shifted gears so quickly you couldn't always follow them into those back roads and dense forests where they wanted to live with the other varmints and wolves. "Raspberry, please. Single scoop?" She smiled at him, to tease him, to test out her power, to give him an anguished memory tonight when he was in bed and couldn't sleep, thinking of her in the density of his empty, stupid life. Walking back to the sand and holding her ice cream cone, she started to think about Gordy Himmelman. And when she did, the crummy lake and the public beach with the algae floating in it 100 feet offshore in front of her made her feel weird and dizzy, as if, what was the point? She kept walking and taking an occasional personal lick at the ice cream. There weren't too many other people on the sand, but most of the men were fat, and their wives or girlfriends were fat too, and already they had started to yell at each other, even though it was just barely lunchtime. She kept walking. It was something to do. Nobody here was beautiful. It all sucked. The lake gave her a funny feeling, just the fact that it was there. The sky was sky blue, and her mother had said it was a perfect day, but if this was a perfect day, if this was the best that God could manage with the available materials, then, well, no wonder Gordy Himmelman had shot himself, and no wonder her mother had put up that picture of Switzerland in her bedroom. Gina saw her whole life stretched out in front of her, just like that, the 52 deck of cards with Family Day printed on one side, like the picture of the lake in Switzerland that she could barely stand to glance at, vacuuming her up. Why couldn't anything ever be perfect? It just wasn't possible. This wasn't perfect. It was its opposite, fecked, a totally fecked day. Just to the side, off on another beach towel, someone's mom was yelling at and then slapping a little boy, slapping him, wham, 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 out in public and in front of everybody. And of course the kid was screaming now, screaming, 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 screaming. Everybody having their own version of Family Day. Gina carried the ice cream cone to the water's edge. Right there, she saw herself in the algaed water, walking upside down, holding a raspberry ice cream cone, and next to her own water image, another water image, the sun this time. Gina walked into the water out to where the algae dispersed, staring first at her diminishing reflection and then at the sun. It'd be interesting to get blind, she thought. People and seeing eye dogs would take care of you and lead you through the rest of your life forever. You'd be on a leash. The dog would make all the big decisions. Then she noticed that when she walked into the water, her images were sucked into it. As the water got deeper, there was less of you above it, as if you had gone on an instant diet. Okay, now that her legs had disappeared, you didn't have to look at her legs, because they weren't there anymore. Well, they were underwater, but the water was so dirty she couldn't see them as well as she could see her reflection at the surface of her waist, her head, her chest, the ice cream cone. Walking into the water was a kind of solution, watching your girl image get all swallowed up until there was no image left, just the water. She held the ice cream cone above the water and then, after another lick, let it go as she went under. Under the surface, she held her breath as long as she could, and then she thought of Gordy Himmelman, and, sort of experimentally, she tried breathing in some water just to see what it was like, and she choked. She felt herself panicking and going up to the surface, but then she fought the panic when she imagined she saw somebody like Gordy Himmelman, though better looking, more like her dad, under the water with her, holding her hand and telling her it was better down here and all the problems were solved. So she tried to relax and breathe in a little more water. She registered little thunderbolts of panic, and then some peace, and then panic. Then it was all right. And family day was finally over. And because she wasn't a very good swimmer anyway, she began to sink to the bottom, though there were all those annoying voices. She would miss Wilbur, the guinea pig, but not much else. She drifted down and away. Her father and the lifeguard had seen the scoop of raspberry ice cream floating on the surface of the lake at the same time. They both rushed in, and Gina's dad reached her body first. He pulled her up, thrashed his way to the beach, where, without thinking, he gave his daughter a Heimlich maneuver. Water erupted out of her mouth. Gina's eyes opened, and her father laid her down on the sand, and she said, "Gordy?" But what she said was garbled by the water still coming out of her lungs into her mouth, and out of her mouth into the sand. As she came around, her hair falling around her eyes, she seemed disarrayed somehow, but pleased by all the fuss. And then she smiled, because she had seen her father's face smeary with love.
Writer Charles Baxter with an excerpt from his novel, Saul and Patsy.